Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We've been looking at a series of news stories today related to the Constitution or related to issues of war. We have noted, of course, the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States has denied Michael New his petition and appeal. I'd like to talk to his father, Daniel New, a little bit about this at a future juncture on this show. We looked a little bit at Paul Craig Roberts' commentary today about the war that continues to go on and on and on. And finally, we looked at a very, very fine piece today at Global Research involving this whole issue of war in the police state, the complicity of the American people by Donna Thorne. I think when you look at all of the different pieces of the puzzle, some things are coming together in a most ominous way that suggests that your freedoms and mine are in danger, absolute danger. And that we need to ensure that in the future we are making it very, very clear that there are certain lines that we cannot and will not cross. There are certain lines that we will insist that our leadership continue to respect in regard to the Constitution of the country. How much time is left for the old republic? Some people say it's already dead. Some say that we have a very, very short window of time in which to save it. That's a very, very important difference of opinion. Whatever the truth is on that matter, it is a very, very dark and critical time in the history of the United States. And if there is any time left to save the old republic, it is something that's going to have to be undertaken, again, in a very, very short period and time frame. You know, as we continue to look at news stories today, I go back again to this piece by Donna Thorne, because it, I think, tells us something about a little bit of the thinking that I saw last night when I was attending this Air Force Band of the West concert. She talks about a series of things that the American people have become acquiescent in. And as we think about it, it's an incremental situation and yet nonetheless a very dangerous one that has been perpetrated upon us by the educational system, the news media, the government, the national security state, in a way that now has us supposedly defending our liberties, when in fact the methodologies that we are using to defend our liberties domestically and internationally are in the process of destroying any pretext that we have had to liberty, to the possession of it, and to the exercise of it according to the Constitution of our own land. Donna Thorne then goes on to say in her piece entitled War in the Police State, Complicity of the American People, that inarguably a collective set of circumstances exist to explain the acquiescence of the American people. What follows is the first in a series of explorations by which this writer will attempt to identify possible core factors contributing to the scourge of apathy in American society today. One cannot analyze the dynamics of a post-9/11 society without examining one of its principal characteristics: fear, anxiety, dread, and apprehension, or in a word, terror. To those who benefit from its proliferation, fear is a currency, a commodity, and a powerful marketing tool. If one is aware of the devices by which leaders have garnered power and support for any given war or agenda historically, one can easily discern the same machinations at work today. A key ingredient to any successful war rally or acquisition of power is the exploitation of fear through the manipulation of perception. On September the 11th, 2001, corporate media and the government elite launched an aggressive political and media campaign upon and against the American people. With Madison Avenue expertise, purveyors of fear heightened our perception of imminent threat by inundating the airways with continual, repetitive, easily learned sound bites, words brimming with emotionally charged meaning. Quote, Bin Laden, Taliban, Axis of Evil, Saddam Hussein, terror threat, terrorist, unquote, with just enough intensity to successfully persuade the American people to procure security at any cost. Comprehensive and firmly entrenched fear is the means by which the current administration manages to sell the war on terror, and allowed to flourish, has solidified mechanized cooperation from the masses as our leaders appeal to the most basic of all human needs, security. The groundwork has been laid. Today, newly identified threats are announced with almost predictable regularity. Now firmly embedded in the collective unconscious of America, fear is employed to rationalize unprecedented dictatorial powers in the White House to justify the erosion of privacy and the stripping of human rights once sacredly guarded by the Constitution. Yet, what should one expect from an administration whose platform is built upon a substratum of fear, except for fear itself? Fear attempts to silence dissenters. As the truth movement gains momentum and amasses credibility, the fear profiteers have begun heralding yet another threat to national security: inquiring minds. This is both good news and bad news. We are no longer ignorable. Fearing exposure, the czars of propaganda know that truthers must be branded and discredited if government corruption and corporate fraud is to flourish unabated. This said, prepare for an intensified smear and fear campaign. Any group or individual who vocally questions the official story of 9/11 or who exercises the right to demand government accountability will be labeled anti-American and anti-patriotic. A well-documented strategy of propagandists throughout modern history, dissolving credibility through character assassination, is a calculated tactic utilized to persuade the uninformed public to turn a deaf ear to, in effect, remain uninformed. It remains to be seen if this line of attack will succeed, and success is dependent upon each individual proponent of freedom. As with the human longing for security, the natural desire for affiliation and acceptance works in favor of the warmongering, power-hungry elite, for they know only the bravest of the brave will dare risk ostracism for a noble cause. Fear begets fear and dulls rationality. Under fear's influence, the autonomic nervous system shifts into fight-or-flight mode. Perhaps this either-or response clarifies the bipartisanship of laboring freedom fighters and the willingly deceived. The former empower themselves with knowledge. The latter, so fearful of annihilating reassuring illusions, continue to defend the crimes of their pseudo-conservative leaders and in so doing stave off the anxieties which would surely accompany enlightenment. So desperate to believe in an imaginary benevolent Big Brother, we the people unknowingly and sometimes willingly turn a deaf ear to the truth, choosing instead to believe a lie. We lull ourselves into complacency or forced submission. We allow fear to breed a culture of silent ignorance and unthinking loyalty by which dictatorial regimes are allowed to flourish. We would do well to remember that a fear-struck population is easily led. This is Donna Thorne speaking today on War in the Police State, the Complicity of the American People. You can find that at globalresearch.ca. That's Dr. Michael Chosadowski's site, which is for the Center for Research on Globalization. Folks, this is exactly what I think is happening in the country. And as we think about fear, there perhaps are some legitimate reasons, however, to feel a sense of fear. And one of those involves the threat to the republic, the threat to our economy, the threat to our political and cultural scene that is posed by the whole doctrine of illegal immigration. And today we have Michael Cutler on to discuss this. Michael Cutler has a very, very amazing biography, which I want to get in with you shortly. But we'd like to welcome him to the show first and foremost, and to greet him as a guest of Mark Dankoff's America. How are you, Michael?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. How are you today?
Well, very good. I've been talking about all kinds of things in the first hour of the show, talking about the Michael Nuke case and the denial of his petition to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we've been covering a little bit of the commentary of both Donna Thorne and Paul Craig Roberts in regard to the war in Iraq and the Bush administration's policies. And that then brings us into the whole question now of illegal immigration and this guest worker amnesty program, among many other things that's being proposed by the administration and by some people in Congress. What's your take on that, Michael?
Sheer lunacy. You know, let's talk about the war on terror. I was listening to what you had to say, and there's a lot that I do agree with you. I do believe that there is a risk of terrorism in the United States, but unfortunately, I believe that, you know, look, we were attacked. There's no doubt in my mind that on 9/11 there was a terrible attack that was done against the United States by terrorists. But then on the other hand, we have wide open borders, which enables anybody who wants to come to the United States to do so.
Yes.
This is a very dangerous situation for us, because if you have no way of controlling your borders, then you have no way of keeping criminals and terrorists from coming into your country and doing a number on your citizens. And then when you look at the president making statements that, you know, well, we've tried immigration law enforcement and it doesn't work, and that's why we need an amnesty program, makes about as much sense as saying to people, boy, you know, it's 3 degrees outside, it's snowing like crazy, and the wind is coming at you sideways, and that's why we need to go out and buy bathing suits. It doesn't follow.
Yes.
If you're trying to secure your country, then you need to keep the people out of the country who want to do harm to you. And it's not that we have tried enforcement and it doesn't work. All we've been given by decades now of administrations is an illusion of enforcement. It's the illusion that does not work. And that's something for people to understand. We've only got about 3,000 special agents working at ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to try to bring a semblance of integrity to an immigration system that's clearly broken. New York is the safest big city in America. I am a New Yorker. I'm in Washington right now with the hold their feet to the fire rallies and demonstrations and so forth. But I will tell you that the reason New York is so safe is that we have about 37 or 38,000 police officers with a population of about 8 million residents. Here we have two or three times as many illegal aliens scattered across the whole country with about 3,000 agents trying to do something meaningful that offers a deterrent to illegal immigrants or illegal aliens. Actually, I shouldn't be using that term, illegal immigrant. It's the administration's term, and it's a contradiction in terms. But understand why we are where we are right now and understand who benefits by this. Wages have been plummeting. Pressure on labor has been tremendous. When people say this is a conservative issue, you were talking about the name-calling that goes on. I find it incredible that if you say you want a secure border, you're immediately identified in so many of the newspapers and radio and TV programs as a right-wing extremist, a right-wing Republican. In point of fact, I'm probably one of the most vocal, outspoken advocates for secure borders and an immigration system that has integrity. I'm a registered Democrat. And if I sat here and went over issue by issue where I stand on most issues, you'd accuse me of being a liberal. This isn't a conservative or a liberal issue. This is an American issue. So it's just an incredible situation that we're in right now. And it really has to change if we're going to protect America's working poor, America's middle class, and America's security.
Yes, and it seems to me that that all of that would be self-evident. What do you make of the fact, Michael, that here we are in the last 6 or 7 years up until this last January of having a Republican chief executive and Republican control of the House and the Senate, again, up until this last January. And yet, arguably, in that period of time, it seems to me that the problem has simply mushroomed, and the president of the United States, as near as I can tell, is an advocate of both open borders as well as an amnesty program for illegals. What are we to make of this?
Well, I think there's an agenda here. Labor is a commodity. It's no different from any other commodity, whether it's petroleum or jelly beans. The more you have, the less expensive they are. The reason that diamonds are so expensive is because they're so relatively rare. If you could dig a hole in the ground and pull out a bucket of diamonds, then diamonds would become as worthless as broken glass. So it's a matter of supply and demand. And I think that already the president has accomplished part of a goal that I believe he's had, and that goal is to drive down wages. By allowing so many people to come into the United States, wages have plummeted. And every time he says guest worker program, according to T.J. Bonner, the president of the Border Patrol Union, the immediate reaction is the next day, many more people flow across the border with Mexico, hoping to participate in this amnesty program that Congress and the president will tell you is not an amnesty, which I think is ridiculous. If you allow people to violate our laws, violate our borders, and then say to them, pay a fine, and that therefore it's no longer an amnesty, well, think about this. Imagine if narcotics agents found somebody with a kilo of heroin, and they said, okay, pay a $20,000 fine, you can keep the kilo of heroin, have a nice day. Would that be an amnesty? Of course it would. The goal for the illegal alien who comes here is because they want to get a job and then send money home. And on the flip side of this thing, look at the exploitation of illegal aliens, which is also very disturbing to me. They're exploited by everybody in sight. They're exploited by their own government that see in them a source of revenue. Last year, $22 billion was wired home to Mexico. That's the money that was wired home, not smuggled across the Mexican border where people stuffed it into suitcases or furniture or put it in their pockets and came across the Mexican border. if you looked at those numbers, I'm not even sure where we'd be, but there'd be certainly lots more money going out of our country into Mexico than even the $22 billion that we are aware of. But just look at the $22 billion. That makes money being imported to Mexico from the United States their second greatest source of revenue for the Mexican economy, second only to petroleum. So the Mexican government encourages its people to come to the United States. Very often they provide health care to Mexicans who are looking to come to America to make certain that they can survive the journey, because if they survive the journey, then they can become those people who send money home. Now, these Mexicans are then exploited by the smugglers, who very often rape the women, beat the men, steal their possessions, charge them exorbitant sums to bring them across the border, often putting them in harm's way where many of them are either injured or killed, and very often use them as mules to transport narcotics across the border, even if they don't want to. Then they're exploited by the unscrupulous employer who pay them substandard wages under substandard conditions. And you even have advocacy groups who say, well, we're an immigrant rights group. But yet, when was the last time you saw one of those so-called immigrant rights groups protesting the deplorable conditions under which illegal aliens work in the United States? That doesn't happen, because they want those large numbers of people to be here who they can claim to represent, which then gives them leverage and access to money. And then they get exploited by the lawyers who are praying that there will be a guest worker program, because then the lawyers will suddenly have millions upon millions of clients running to their offices, giving them thousands of dollars each in legal fees. And you even have people who claim to be lawyers and who aren't, who victimize these people. And then you have the unscrupulous landlords who will allow 15 people to sleep in an apartment that was designed for, you know, a family of four. So suddenly you've got 15 people occupying that apartment, and each person, usually each man that lives there, is maybe paying $150 or $200 a month for the privilege of sleeping on a mattress on a floor in a filthy apartment. So it's, you know, everyone is getting whipsawed and hammered. The only people making out on the deal are the people at the very top of the food chain. I hope I make sense to you.
Well, yes, it makes a lot of sense to me, and it's a very, very disturbing thing to consider all of this, because at the risk of being simplistic, it sounds to me like what we have boiled to its essence is a circumstance where between corporate America and the representatives of corporate America, which presumably include the president and the advocates of this amnesty program in the Congress, you have a situation where, in the interest of cheaper and cheaper labor, all of the political and societal and cultural fallout from this and the economic fallout from it for everybody else is simply being ignored.
Well, that's right. And if you look at illegal immigration, you know, when the president debated John Kerry, and I found it kind of remarkable that, if you remember the debate that they had when Kerry was running against the president, Bob Schaefer made a point that he had received so many emails from people who were concerned about illegal immigration. That translated into just one question. You would think that if he had received so many emails about immigration, that perhaps half the debate, if not an entire debate, should have been devoted to border security, immigration, and so forth. But consider what the president said. He said that, having been the governor of a border state, he understood illegal immigration better than anybody else. I went to the border with Bay Buchanan. And it's interesting. Bay is, of course, a political conservative. I'm mostly a liberal. And we've become pretty good friends. And, you know, because we have reached common ground where, for different reasons, perhaps, we both understand how serious this issue is. Because remember, folks, illegal immigration hammers so many other aspects of the United States. It affects the economy, the environment, education, health care, criminal justice, national security. You know, we can go on forever. So with all of this for a backdrop, you have the president making a statement that he understands illegal immigration because he was the governor of a border state. Well, when I went to the border with Bay Buchanan, one thing that was not visible along the border were tents. Nobody set up a tent and said, okay, I'm going to live here. When illegal aliens enter the United States, they head for the rest of the country. They get into cars and buses and airplanes and trains and do whatever they have to do to get to counties and towns all over America. So this is an American problem. This is no longer a border problem.
We will be back with Michael Cutler. Michael graduated from Brooklyn College of the City University of New York in 1971. He is an acknowledged expert in this whole arena of illegal immigration. He was an immigration inspector assigned to the JFK International Airport, and in 1975 became a criminal investigator for the INS. Stay tuned.
Summer is once again just around the corner, and as usual, so are higher gas prices. This year, stop taking it on the chin and start fighting back. Ethos FR, a product tested and found worthy by NBC and Fox News, can save you up to 19% on fuel and reduce emissions by up to 30%. Unlike other products and gadgets you've seen advertised, Ethos FR attacks the source of the problem, unburned fuel. You see, exhaust is essentially unburned fuel that's expelled from your tailpipe. That equates to toxins being released into the environment and dollars being released from your wallet. But with Ethos FR, fuel burns more completely, helping your engine to deliver better mileage and helping you to save money. And it's so easy to use. Simply pour a couple of ounces into your tank at every fill-up, and you're on your way to saving money and the environment. So, do yourself and the environment a favor and visit ctsavegas.com to get your bottle today. That's ctsavegas.com.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Michael W. Cutler, talking about guest worker amnesty programs for illegal aliens, among many other things. Michael W. Cutler, by the way, I want to read this in its entirety because it's important. He graduated from Brooklyn College of the City University of New York in 1971 with a BA in Communications Arts and Sciences. Mr. Cutler began working for the INS in October of 1971 when he entered on duty as an immigration inspector assigned to JFK International Airport. In August of 1975, he became a criminal investigator or special agent for the INS in New York City. He rotated through virtually every squad in the investigations branch. From 1988 until 1991, he was assigned as the INS representative to the Unified Intelligence Division of the DEA in New York. In 1991, he was promoted to the position of senior special agent and was assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, which required that he work with members of other law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, DEA, ATF, U.S. Customs, and local and state police, as well as law enforcement organizations of other countries, including Israel, Canada, Great Britain, and Japan, to conduct investigations of aliens involved in major drug trafficking organizations. He retired from the INS in February of 2002 after a career that spanned some 30 years. Finally, Michael Cutler has appeared on numerous television and radio programs, including Lou Dobbs, Fox News, MSNBC, and many other television and radio news-oriented programs to discuss the enforcement of immigration laws. Michael, as we get back to our conversation then,
right.
You make reference in your April 14th piece for newswithviews.com to a statement that was made by Emilio T. Gonzalez, who is the director of the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service. Mr. Gonzalez said some things before the House Appropriations Committee on March 27th. What were you referring to, and what were the implications of some of what Mr. Gonzalez had to say?
Well, you know, Mr. Gonzalez is, again, a guy who talks about how he's trying to create an immigration system that has integrity. But before we even get into that, I want you to think about something about Mr. Gonzalez. He used to work for a lobbying organization before he went to work for the U.S. government, an outfit called Two Cardenas, where they used to put on their website the fact that they have people in key positions who could help create possibilities. The guy who was his predecessor, the first director of USCIS, a guy by the name of Eduardo Aguirre, was actually previously employed by the Bank of America at the private bank. He was their director. So what we're looking at is a situation where these folks that run USCIS are constantly chasing their tail, trying to crank out more completed applications for a variety of immigration benefits. My concern is that as they rush off to try to clear their backlogs of application, and I've used the analogy, it's kind of like that old episode of I Love Lucy when she went to the bonbon factory with Ethel, and they were trying to wrap candy. And as they started to wrap the candy, everything was fine, and then the conveyor belt picked up speed. And at first they could deal with all the stuff flying at them, and pretty soon, if you remember the episode, Lucy starts trying to eat the candy, and she's shoveling it down her clothing and doesn't know what in blazes to do with it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a very funny scene. It's one of those classic scenes. It's kind of like the Abbott and Costello go-ahead, back-up routine. But when we're dealing with applications for immigration benefits, it stops being humorous. Last year, USCIS lost, if you can believe this, put your seatbelt on, lost 111,000-plus immigration alien files that relate to aliens seeking a variety of benefits in the United States. Charles Grassley and Sue, I believe it was Sue Collins from Maine, requested that the GAO conduct an investigation, and that's what they came up with. USCIS lost 111,000 files. I couldn't imagine losing 111,000 paper clips or 111,000 jelly beans. These folks managed to lose 111,000 files of aliens seeking a variety of benefits, including the ability to change status in the United States, including the ability to become resident aliens and get green cards. And it even included 30,000 aliens who were seeking to naturalize. Now, I want you to think about that. When we give United States citizenship to somebody, what we're giving them are the keys to the kingdom, nothing less than that. And we actually adjudicated, the agency did, 30,000 new applications for citizenship without their files. This is a national security risk. And in fact, there was a story that ran in the papers not long ago about an individual who naturalized. They didn't identify his country of citizenship other than to say that he was from an Arab country. He got a top secret clearance working for a private contractor as a translator on a U.S. military base in Iraq, which meant that he most likely had access to highly sensitive documents and perhaps informants, because I know that I use the translators quite frequently as an INS agent. And they, you know, they sit there with you. You're debriefing an informant. You're debriefing somebody you arrested. They're acting as, you know, your mouth and your ears. So certainly he's an integral part. It eventually turned out he was stealing sensitive documents. He was spying, if you will. And then USCIS conceded that although they naturalized when they really weren't sure of his true identity. I mean, this to me is mind-boggling. How many soldiers lost their lives, perhaps, because of this guy? How many soldiers were wounded, perhaps, because of this guy? How much damage was done to the mission of the military because of this guy? And yet USCIS made him a citizen without knowing who he was.
And presumably, how many of these people may be floating around in terms of cell groups in the domestic United States? That's
you
the
betcha.
Terrifying aspect of this.
You
we'll
betcha.
Be back with Michael Cutler. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel or Jeff Bennett help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold. With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel or Jeff Bennett help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Michael Cutler, and he, among other things, has been talking with us about the guest worker amnesty program, quoting from his piece for News with Views. He entitles this The Worst Possible Thing for America. Michael, as we continue chatting about this, the national security implications of this, I think, are incredibly obvious. We've got a circumstance where we're talking about all kinds of political and economic ramifications coming from this. Just in terms of this guy that you cited, who finally wound up as a part of the situation in Iraq and was in a position to be committing espionage against the U.S. government, the American military, and presumably a defense contractor or two. What do you think are the possibilities, real or potential, that we have in this country right now, cell groups that mean us harm, that either that at least in part could be comprised of illegals who are working with these existing established cell groups in the United States, potentially of Middle Eastern origin, or maybe utilized as couriers to support the logistical needs of these cell groups?
Oh, I think the risk is very, very high, and I'll tell you why I say this. And, you know, people have to understand something. How do you define a terrorist? You know, we certainly know a terrorist is somebody that might hijack an airplane or shoot somebody or set off a bomb, whether they're carrying it on themselves or plant it and then leave quickly before they can get caught in the explosion. But that's only part of terrorism. Just like when we watch an air show, and there was a terrible tragedy with the Blue Angels this past week. It was really awful, but I've always been a big fan of the Blue Angels. I was going to be an aerospace engineer way back when, and I did a major change. But when you watch those pilots flying, they're only the tip of the spear. How many people are in the Navy or the Air Force who don't fly airplanes but are still part of the military and have a support role? Terrorism depends on a similar support structure, so that you have many people in various countries that do all sorts of things in support of terrorism, whether it's to provide safe houses for a guy that's going to carry out an attack, whether it's to raise money so that the terrorist organization can function. Terrorism in some ways is not unlike any other business. In order to get anything accomplished, they need money. Terrorism is very often funded by crime, whether it's narcotics trafficking. Rachel Ehrenfeld is a good friend of mine, and Professor Ehrenfeld wrote a book called Funding Evil, where she goes into the issue about how the trafficking of narcotics very often becomes a money-generating enterprise for terrorist and criminal organizations. Mail fraud, insurance fraud, a whole bunch of things, coupon fraud. Back in the 1980s, I was involved in an arrest of illegal aliens working in a diner. The last thing I had on my mind that day was terrorism. One of the guys we attempted to arrest was a young man from Egypt. He ran like the wind. The other guys, you know, very quietly surrendered. We handcuffed them and we took them away. This guy jumped out of a window by the basement, like a little transom, and he ran through the parking lot. We eventually brought him in for a landing, but it was just incredible to watch this guy going. He was running literally across the hoods and roofs of cars in the parking lot. And when we eventually grabbed him, we brought him back to his apartment to get his passport for two reasons: to properly identify him and because we'd need the passport in order to remove him from the United States. We found shopping bags, paper shopping bags from major department stores lining the wall of his apartment. And I said, what in blazes do you do with all these coupons? And coupons were there for things that he obviously had no use for: diapers, dog food, women's sanitary products, and so forth. And here's a single man living in that apartment. And I said, what's the point to this? And we had no idea at this point about coupon fraud. And he said to me, oh, kids in the neighborhood come in and they play with the coupons. I said, how in blazes can you play with coupons? And he just shrugged his shoulders and refused to answer any further questions. Well, eventually we deported this guy, and a couple of months later, this was the early 80s, I saw a television program. I don't recall if it was ABC, NBC, one of the networks. And the program focused on how Yasser Arafat had sent people to the United States to engage in coupon fraud to generate millions of dollars each year, ripping off American companies, sending money back to Arafat so that he could then buy explosives and guns and other materials so that he could carry out terrorist attacks in the Middle East. Now, what I started to find out, because I also wound up working with New York City police and fire marshals and ATF, is we had other individuals from the Middle East who were buying up little grocery stores, or bodegas, as we call them in New York, and then they would use those stores to carry out coupon fraud. When they got tired of doing that, they would torch the stores and take the insurance money and mail that home. And in a number of instances, people were terribly burned. Some people died. Was that a terrorist attack? To my thinking, it was, because the crime was committed in support of terrorism. So the problem is this. If you have people in your country, you don't know their identities, they become a potential threat to your safety. I was on Lou Dobbs a while back, and poor Lou's head was spinning, kind of like that scene from The Exorcist with Linda Blair. I mean, he was really worked up. And I said, Lou, what is it? He said, wait till we get the – we were on the commercial break while I was getting wired up and sitting in the chair next to him. He said, wait till you see this segment. I want your reaction live as we do it. I said, okay. And there was Dick Cheney with a wireless microphone at a town hall meeting doing a kind of a Phil Donahue impersonation. and he's with the audience, and he says, we've got millions of undocumented aliens in the United States. We don't know who they are, what they are, or what, where they are, or what they're up to. And that's why we need a guest worker program. Well, my head started spinning. I mean, goodness gracious. If you have millions of people whose identities are unknown, if you don't know where they are, and if you don't know why they're here, do you think the best thing you could do with them is to give them official identity documents without knowing who they really are so they could further embed themselves in our country? And, you know, if you look at terrorists who've operated within our country, and Janice Kephart was a counsel on the 9/11 Commission. In fact, I provided her with testimony. I think it's also important to make note of the fact that I've also testified before 16 congressional hearings on immigration-related issues. I've been called by both sides of the political aisle, by the way. But I provided testimony to Janice Kephart, and Janice did a study, and it was a very interesting study. She was able to identify 94 terrorists operating in our country prior to 9/11. Of those 94, 59 used immigration benefit fraud either to enter the United States or to embed themselves in our country once they got here. The whole point to a terrorist, just like a spy, is to not call attention to themselves. You know, when you watch a James Bond movie, it's pretty obvious who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. The music changes. The camera angle changes. James Bond is running around in a $10,000 suit and a $100,000 sports car with gold watches. And in reality, folks, the average spy is somebody who would not attract your attention. He would walk by you probably wearing blue jeans and a sweatshirt. His goal is to be as quiet and nondescript and forgettable, not memorable, but forgettable as possible. Somebody once said, in fact, that an effective spy is somebody who would not attract the attention of a waitress at a greasy spoon diner. You could say the same thing about a terrorist. And when the president says, well, if we had a guest worker program, then we would know who's here, and the people that are here to do the work Americans won't do could do that work, and the law enforcement people could deal with the terrorists. It's such an outrageous statement. Because if you ever read an article about a terrorist suspect who's arrested, whether it's in the United States or Canada or England or Germany or France or Spain, anywhere, almost always you will see where they describe the work the guy did. And interestingly, very often they have a job that requires they drive a vehicle that provides them with camouflage, whether it's an ice cream truck, whether it's a taxi cab, whether it's a limousine. So the bottom line is they want mobility. They want to be able to scope places out, have clandestine meetings with their buddies, do what they have to do to prepare themselves to carry out a mission. They work in used car lots. They teach school. There was one terrorist, in fact, who was working as a school bus driver in Canada, which gave him access to young boys, to teenage boys, and he recruited some of the older ones to try to work with him. This was up in Canada last year. So when the president says, well, if they're coming here to work, that's great. No, that's how terrorists embed themselves in a country. And so we hear this nonsense, and the other mythology, of course, that we hear is that they do the work Americans won't do. Well, if you read the accounts of coal miners who can work in those coal mines, or about people who work in steel foundries, and you've got people that drive garbage trucks, or they become firefighters and race into burning buildings to try to rescue total strangers. If Americans can do these jobs day in and day out, and they do, we do as Americans, then I don't think there's a job an American will not take as long as when he gets his paycheck at the end of the month, he's able to support himself and his family. The problem here is that illegal aliens are willing to work for lower wages under worse conditions. The net effect that this has on the job market, the labor market, is to drive down wages. If you look at the meatpacking industry, that's dirty, dangerous work. Traditionally, they were paying $19 an hour in Nebraska at those meatpacking plants. Because they now have an ample supply of illegal aliens, the wages have dropped to $9 an hour. So what we wind up with are people losing good jobs, being replaced by illegal aliens, and you see the impact that it has throughout the American economy.
Yes, I mean, start looking at this. I mean, the implications of this are absolutely mind-boggling. And I've tried to list, as we've been chatting, five or six, seven different areas I want to ask you about specifically, Michael, and you've already covered some of them. But just in terms of the national security thing, before we get into some of the economics of this, presumably When you look at the USA Patriot Acts 1 and 2 and the Military Commissions Act of 2006 and this NSA warrantless surveillance program that was unveiled by the New York Times a year or two ago, presumably the president and Mr. Cheney and other people in the national security establishment are so concerned about this terrorist issue that this is presumably why some of these things have been enacted that continue to be controversial in our society. When it comes to some of the things that you cite, including the fact that USCIS lost 111,000 files on these illegals, and that 30,000 of these folks were naturalized.
These weren't illegals. These were aliens seeking benefits. So I would say they probably weren't illegal. Most of them probably were not.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. They were simply people seeking benefits.
Right.
That in regard to that, and in regard to this much larger issue of the 12 to 20 million illegals who are thought to be here, is this something where when you look at the performance or non-performance of USCIS and all of the implications of some of the things that the president and Cheney have stated on this subject, is there any evidence that the Drug Enforcement Agency and the CIA and the FBI and the National Security Agency and some of the other folks doing the things that they do in the national security apparatus of this country have weighed in with concerns to both the executive and legislative branches of government in regard to this whole crisis?
Well, absolutely. Look, Richard Mueller, the head of the FBI, testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee about a year or two ago, and he was talking about his concern about sleeper cells, which is exactly what we're talking about. You know, really and truly, we are at risk. I believe that, and I know there's some people that say, oh, no, there was no terrorist attack. You know, I have to tell you, I was in Wisconsin last week. It was an interesting event. It was a conference on corporate security and disaster recovery after an event, and not necessarily a terrorist attack after a fire or some other incident. But they did focus on terrorism as well. I spoke, and one of the other gentlemen who spoke was a New York City police officer. What's interesting was on 9/11, he was in a helicopter that overflew my car. I never realized it until I was at this conference and we compared notes. He was an emergency service police officer. Emergency services in New York is the equivalent of SWAT plus much more. There's a saying in New York City that when a citizen is in trouble, he calls the police. When a police officer is in trouble, he calls emergency services. These guys are prepared and equipped to go everywhere and do just about anything, whether it's a guy that's going to jump off a bridge, a police officer who's pinned down by gunfire, somebody finds a bomb, you name it, emergency services answers the call. They've got helicopters. They've got all kinds of equipment, heavy-duty weapons. They have it. And I've worked with them doing high-risk entries when we were looking for people who had committed murders, were heavily armed. They would go in with us. They would actually do the entry and secure the location so we could then go in, take custody of the guy, and conduct a search looking for evidence, weapons, and other things. So I've worked closely with these guys over the years, and they're probably the best in the world. They teach police officers from all over the world their tactics. Well, the chopper flew over my car. I was dropping off one of my kids at school, and I didn't have the radio on at that time. And what I did not know is that police helicopter was headed for the Twin Towers because the attack had begun. When I came home, to my horror, I realized the North Tower was ablaze, and as I watched live, I saw the second tower struck by that other airplane. This police officer was in that chopper, and he had a camera with him. They were going to try to do a rescue mission, and they always had cameras on board to document things if the need arose. They were going to try to land on the roof of the World Trade Center, as they had done in 1993 when we had that first attack. The roof was not accessible by any of the victims. They couldn't land. Smoke was terrible. And he took pictures of the towers coming down, people jumping, and Building 7, which has been, I know, a very big controversy, and I think it's important to make note of it. He showed me the pictures of Building 7. It did not implode, as some people imply. It split outwardly, kind of like a banana that had been peeled. And we know there were diesel fuel tanks in that building. And he was convinced, he was there on the ground when that building came down. He was convinced that it was not an implosion or an explosion that was pre-planned, that in fact what we believe happened is what has been published that happened, that the diesel fuel tanks that were in that building designed to be used to fuel vehicles and also for generators and so forth finally lit up and they went. And when they went, they took the rest of the building down. And plus, the foundations were connected. So there was a lot of things that were happening on that day. So I really do believe that it was a terrorist attack that did in the towers, did in that whole complex. The problem is that if you accept the fact that we had a terrorist attack by foreign nationals who gained access to our country, and by the way, all the terrorists, the 19 of them, not one of them ran our borders. They came through ports of entry. So we get to another component of an issue of border security that I'm furious about. And in fact, it was interesting. I bumped into Congressman Dana Rohrabacher last night. I was out having dinner with a bunch of people here in Washington. Dana Rohrabacher was at this dinner. He came into the restaurant at some point. And I've testified for him about the issue of the visa waiver program. And he told me that my testimony has been very helpful to him in combating efforts by the administration to expand the visa waiver program to include other countries. And I just want to spend a minute or two explaining this program because I think it's critical. Normally, when an alien wants to visit the United States, they have to get a visa from the American authorities overseas, whether it's at a consulate or embassy, and they fill out an application that has 40 or so questions. They provide fingerprints and photographs, and they have to explain where they live, where they work, why they're coming to the United States, who they're going to visit with, are they going to stay at a hotel, is there an address of a friend or relative, and so forth. And it's quite a bit of information, and it's very, very helpful. And then our people overseas decide whether or not to issue a visa, which in this case is a stamp in the passport. And when we come back from the break, I'll explain exactly how important this process is.
World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action!
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097.
or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Michael Cutler. And among many other things, you can find Michael's piece on this whole issue of the guest worker amnesty program at newswithviews.com. I'll give the URL later in the broadcast where people can find that. And I'll also have it posted at Breaking All the Rules News with an announcement of Michael's appearance on this show so that people can access that article directly. Wanted to warn Michael, as well as our listeners, as well as several callers that I have online that I will take at some point this morning, that this tends to be a time of frequent commercial interruption on the Republic Broadcasting Network, approximately the next 10 minutes or so, and then there will be a longer period of time for more continuous conversation. I'd like to invite you now to support the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can do that by contacting us at www.republicbroadcasting.org. or giving the office a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's www.republicbroadcasting.org and the World Wide Web, or give us a call at 1-800-724-2719. You can also have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95 plus $4.95 for shipping and handling, by again using those same contact points, republicbroadcasting.org and the World Wide Web, or 1-800-724-2719. The call-in number today is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And I have a couple of callers up on the board that I will take probably shortly after 9 o'clock so that we're not interrupted again by another commercial break. Michael, getting back again to our conversation, we probably have just a minute before we go to another break, and then there'll be a longer period of time for conversation, but you were starting to get into this whole business of the visa waiver program.
Right, and there's really four benefits. I'm going to try to do this in a minute. Being a New Yorker, I can talk a little bit quicker, I think. Bottom line is it's a good screening mechanism for airline passengers. You know, when we take airline flights, we have to take our shoes off because Richard Reid was the shoe bomber. Meanwhile, Richard Reid was a British national who was able to get on board the airplane and able to enter the United States without first applying for a visa. There are 27 such countries, by the way. England is only one of them. So the visa requirement is a good screening mechanism for airline passengers. It also helps the inspector at the airport. Having been an inspector, I can tell you it's a daunting job. So at least you know that the person has been pre-screened, so to speak, by people over at State Department, at the embassy or consulate. Also, the questions that the person answers very often can become very good investigative leads and provide intelligence should that alien at some point fall under investigation as a criminal or terrorist. And finally, if someone lies on that application, that lie is a felony called visa fraud. 5 years if it's being done simply to get to the United States, 20 years if it's in conjunction with drug trafficking, 25 years if it's in conjunction with terrorism. However, none of these benefits apply under the visa waiver program. And when I've complained about it, I've been told that, yes, Mike, you're right, the visa requirement does help national security, but the people in the hospitality and travel industries oppose the re-requirement, because back when I worked at Kennedy Airport, only Canadians and British nationals who were landed immigrants in Canada were exempt visas, but they said the corporations are opposed to requiring visas. Can you imagine that?
Absolutely incredible. We'll be back with Michael Cutler. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.